Hi, I'm David Freudberg, host of Humankind, and I love my work, the opportunity to talk with remarkably enlightened people about things that really matter to all of us. And honestly, the most fun I have is when I hear from listeners I've never met, often from places I've never visited, who've been touched by our Humankind program. The grants we get from the funders you hear named on our program simply don't cover all our expenses. And if you like what you hear, we're asking for your help so we can keep the program and this podcast going. Please visit humanmedia.org, and at the top of the homepage, click on How You Can Help. Thanks. Humankind is produced in association with WGBH Boston and supported by the Humankind Program Fund. Additional funding for the series has been provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the National Institutes of Health, the Annie E. Casey Foundation, and the Park Foundation.
Meditation has been absorbed into medicine and into the mainstream of medicine, both clinically and in terms of scientific research, in ways that were literally inconceivable. If you think back to 1979, when I started the stress reduction clinic.
We visit with Jon Kabat-Zinn, a leading medical researcher and educator in the art of meditation. You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. Many people sit quietly for 10 or 20 minutes first thing in the morning after washing up as a way to calm and focus the mind before launching into their day. Others take a break at midday or in the evening to get refreshed. But as Jon Kabat-Zinn well knows, there can be nothing harder than sitting still.
If meditation's all about paying attention, then the first thing that you notice when you start to pay attention is how impossibly jumpy the mind is, so that it is very hard to pay attention to any one thing for any period of time, because the mind is so agitated that it distracts itself virtually moment by moment. It doesn't even need outside distractions.
And this is entirely normal.
It's totally normal, and everybody experiences it as soon as they start paying attention. And then you think, oh my goodness, I could never meditate because my mind is like a train wreck. But the fact is, everybody's mind isn't like that. It's like the ocean. On the surface, it waves. And if you just identify with the surface, then you think, well, on a nice calm day, it'd be wonderful, but who wants all these waves? And so you try to shut down the waves and make the mind calm. That's an absolute catastrophe. You'll just give yourself a headache. But if you learn how to drop underneath the ocean 20 or 30 or 40 feet, even in the midst of a typhoon or a hurricane, it's just very calm, gentle undulations. It's the same with the mind. If you learn to befriend the whole depth of the mind, then thoughts and emotions can flitter along on the surface, sometimes more agitated, sometimes less, depending on what's going on in your life. But you can always tap into a level of calm that's present all the time.
Jon Kabat-Zinn, author of Coming to Our Senses, earned a doctorate in molecular biology from MIT and blended his love for science with a deepening interest in the practice of meditation. He became fascinated with the mind-body connection, how our thoughts and emotions affect our health, and later directed the Stress Reduction Clinic at the University of Massachusetts Medical School, where he is Emeritus Professor of Medicine.
It's not a matter of forcing the mind to be calm. It's finding those domains of mind that are already calm and then learning how to inhabit them.
And so how does one tap into those calmer waters?
Well, there are many, many different ways to do that, but one of the most pervasive and one of the most effective for beginners is to become more friendly with your own breathing. And then notice that you have choices as to where you even pay attention to the sensations of breathing. And if you learn to pay attention to the sensations of breathing associated with the movements of your belly as the air comes down into the lungs and as the air leaves the lungs, the belly actually balloons out. And if you can sort of learn to ride on the waves of the breath moving in the belly, it carries your attention away from the head, where everything is very agitated to begin with, and it has a natural calming ability. So by learning how to attend to the breath, you're actually teaching yourself how to calm down, and it's almost like a natural tranquilizer. But that's not the most powerful thing that happens. The most powerful thing that happens with meditation is at the same time as you're cultivating calmness, you're also cultivating mindfulness or deep seeing into what's actually unfolding moment by moment. So you're not trying to put yourself into some kind of calm stupor, but instead it becomes like a vivid and lucid awareness of what's actually unfolding moment by moment.
So you're very alert.
Very alert. And that means you can respond to stressful stimuli or changes in the environment or changes in your own mind and body much more effectively than if you are in some calm stupor that you want to stay in and don't want to deal with anything real that's happening in your life.
So you're not putting yourself to sleep. You're actually waking yourself up.
The waking up is a very good metaphor for what this is all about. It's actually waking up to the actuality of our lives and not getting caught in either some kind of quietistic stupor, which often people think of when they think of meditation. They think of just becoming like a zombie or, just sort of navel gazing or something like that, or some kind of quietude that is very calming and feels very good. But if you can't function in the world, that's useless. So this is really the cultivation of a certain kind of calmness and stability of mind that's extremely alert and is very much in the present moment, and that allows you to respond instantly rather than react mindlessly to a continually changing field of inner and outer objects.
So your awareness is simply heightened.
Exactly. And what mindfulness is best described as is awareness, but it's a particular kind of awareness. It's an awareness that is cultivated by paying attention moment by moment in the present moment, non-judgmentally. And we're so conditioned to judge everything as whether it like it or don't like it, that very often it's impossible to actually get out of our own way enough to drop in on the kind of awareness we're talking about. But everybody already has it. It's not like you have to synthesize it. It's a natural part of being human. But it isn't taught, it isn't pointed out to us in kindergarten or in grade school.
Mindfulness is considered an Asian concept, sometimes translated into English as heartfulness. It starts with a quieting down, so we can notice things going on right in front of our eyes and ears that we may not always be aware of. Instead of getting lost in thought a million miles or years away, a person settles into the here and now. This calmness can be therapeutic. A nurse who trains medical patients in mindfulness relaxation, Professor Susan Bauer Wu at Emory University in Atlanta, allowed us to listen in briefly as she instructed a patient. Her pace is unrushed.
Be aware that you're breathing in oxygen that's bringing life to every cell throughout your body. So breathing does give life to ourselves. When you breathe out, be aware that you're breathing out. You can breathe out tension, breathe out anxiety. Breathing in life and energy, and breathing out anxiety, tension, frustration. Be aware of the chair supporting you, your feet on the ground. There's nowhere to go, just to be right here in this room, right now.
What's actually happening when a person breathes, and how is that mechanism used in the meditative process?
Well, breathing is one of many, many different biological functions of the body. Obviously, it's an essential function. If you don't get this breath in, it's curtains. But we tend to ignore it unless we're choking or drowning or something like that. We don't give the breath any thought at all. We take it totally for granted. When you start to bring awareness to the breath in the kind of ways I'm suggesting, you might get the impression in the early stages of doing this that it's the breath itself that's important as the object of your attention. But it's not. What's important is the attending itself. It's the awareness that comes out of paying attention to the breath. The breath is a kind of wonderful starting place. It's very user-friendly, and you can't leave home without it. So it's always available to us, even under very stressful conditions. And we teach people to drop in on the breath under, you know, conditions of very high stress. And it is not only calming, but also instantaneously clarifying so that you can respond more mindfully rather than react more mindlessly when the proverbial stuff is hitting the proverbial fan. That becomes a practice that you can work at moment by moment, day in, day out. When it comes right down to it, it's this cultivation of awareness that allows you the kind of freedom that we've been talking about. And the body has its ear to the rail, so it responds and it becomes healthier in many ways than you might even think it's possible, even if you have some kind of chronic medical condition that's not automatically going to get better. You can still live a life of much greater quality and work around the edges of whatever your disability is in ways that are truly astonishing, jaw-dropping. And I never get used to how amazing it is to see people who have lives that you wouldn't want to live in for 1 second take to this practice in such a way that they actually enhance the quality of their lives and the degree of happiness that they experience in ways that are truly staggering.
The sound of bells sometimes used to mark the passage of time while a meditator sits quietly. Research shows that mindfulness meditation can help with a range of health problems, including anxiety, chronic pain, depression, insomnia, even skin conditions like psoriasis. And studies on the benefits of meditation are increasingly funded by the National Institutes of Health.
Can you tell us a couple of stories of people you've known whose healing from illness was dramatically enhanced by practicing meditation?
Yeah, a number of people. One woman came to me with a medical record, basically, that was as high as the surface of this desk. If we put her medical record on the floor, it was like just staggering. She had hypertension, labile hypertension. She had severe osteoarthritis. She had lupus, just endless medical problems. And not really responding to the various medical treatments that she was undergoing. Her sleep was extremely disturbed. And she decided to come into the stress reduction clinic. In 8 weeks, her sleep was normal. Her arthritis pain had reduced by an enormous amount. Her blood pressure came back to normal. I mean, just like staggering things, because these things had been dysregulated for decades. Now, she had some very, very profound insights, and many of her medical problems were really a result of something she was carrying in her heart for years and years and years from childhood that got resolved through insight, cultivated through mindfulness.
So what is the breakthrough that mindfulness confers on someone, allowing them to develop that insight that can heal their mind and relieve them of threatening symptoms?
I think, in a word, it's that that you discover that you're much bigger than you think you are, and that many of our cancer patients say they discover that they're not their cancer. It's not like we say that to them, but they come in and say, you know, I've realized I'm not my cancer. I've been thinking myself as a cancer patient, but actually I'm me. I'm much bigger than the cancer. And if I'm just completely preoccupied with the cancer, then, you know, in a sense, I've cut myself off from the larger resources that might be available to me if I realize how big I am.
I am not my disease.
I am not my disease. I am not my pain. I am not my depression. I am not my anxiety. The very fact that we attach the personal pronouns to it, my cancer, my problem, my stress, my disease, personalizes it in a way that's actually a contraction. It's like, don't think of it as your cancer. Think of it as the body cancering. It's a process, but there's a much bigger process going on, and that is that the body is also healing. It has the potential to heal. And if you align mind and body together with a strong intentionality and a strong self-compassion and a strong opening and not taking your own story and your own self so seriously, then you're optimizing the conditions for healing, even though you don't know what's ultimately going to happen with the progression of your cancer or your lung disease or your heart disease or your chronic pain. You open to the not knowing, but you let everything align with this deep intentionality for well-being, for clarity, and for not taking personally what's ultimately not personal. So it's never my cancer, my heart disease, my fear. But as long as you got that my gnawing away at you and you don't have a larger awareness of that, then it sort of takes over and it prevents a lot of these energies from aligning themselves in a way that might be healing of the body and the mind.
The universe is not picking on me.
No, on the contrary, the challenge is to align yourself with what the Chinese call the Tao. You know, the universe in its all its lawfulness hasn't excluded you, and it's not picking you out. It's some special case for torture or for, you know, humiliation or for, you know, your sinful behavior or anything like that. It's really inviting you, so to speak, to ride this wave or to adventure in the field of what the hand that's been dealt to you and see what's possible when you bring, in a sense, all your inner interior resources to the table, most of which we don't even know we possess.
Listening to Humankind, I'm David Freudberg. For more information on this segment, The Present Moment with Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn, visit our website, humanmedia.org. Meditation is not a skill people pick up overnight. Instead, practitioners must work at it over time.
It requires a certain kind of kindling and ongoing practice. And the beauty of it is that while it does have a degree of discipline, it's really a profound act of love and a gesture of self-compassion to give yourself over to awareness and learn to rest in awareness and let go of the stories of the personal pronouns and how the world has it in for me or God or the universe or whatever, or I'm no good or I'm not worthy, or all of those little self-statements that gnaw away at ourselves and that are completely inaccurate, but when you believe them, they become your reality. So then it becomes incredibly liberating if you see deeply into that and just say, that stuff is just thinking. It's conditioned thinking. I'm going to go with a larger picture that instead of just being caught in thought, I'll just rest in an awareness that knows thought, that knows emotion, but doesn't get caught in the intricacies of it. That's an art form. That's what Thoreau called it. You know, it's the art of conscious living. And it's applicable to virtually any human being, no matter how old, no matter how young, who cares about living the life that's his or hers to live, as opposed to his, you know, living sort of slightly aside from yourself for your whole life and then seeing through a glass darkly and wishing that life would all come together for yourself, but knowing in some deep way that it won't.
So don't squander the precious gift.
Oh, absolutely. It's an incredibly, a human life is considered, you know, to be the greatest of all gifts, and it's also extremely fleeting. So there's no moment that's not incredibly precious. Since we only live in the present moment, why not learn to really inhabit it with full awareness? And when we do that, first of all, most of us are really into having the future work out for ourselves, so we're continually preoccupied with planning for the future, worrying about the future and everything else. But the only way you can actually change or influence the future is by living the present moment completely, because it is already the future of all the moments that came before. So if you're willing to own this moment, the next moment's going to be very different because you showed up for this one. You've got infinitely more choices when you show up.
But you're not saying people shouldn't take prudent steps to plan reasonably for the
future. Oh, no, I'm not putting down planning at all. I mean, we'd be really in bad shape if we didn't plan. But a lot of the time, planning and worrying become a disease, and we're so much in the future, and then when we're not planning and worrying, we're reminiscing about how great it used to be, but in, you know, the good old days, or how horrible, you know, it was, and it's going to keep on going like this. And the present moment, which is, as we've been saying, the only time you ever really have for learning or for loving or for growing or for even taking a breath, the present moment gets so squeezed that we actually are living more like robots in the past than the future. In the present, which is where it's all like happening, all the healing, all the potential for living life fully is kind of getting dissipated, destroyed. And you can't blame that on anybody else. It's just like we're not paying attention to what's most important because we're so caught up in that I, me, and mine, and my life, and my future, and my ambition, and my fears. And the fact of the matter is that when we're caught in the story of all of that, we can't see the reality, the actuality.
We have to break out of this storyline.
Yeah. And people often talk about this as kind of breaking through a certain kind of dream, a certain kind of consensus hypnotic trance that, you know, you live in. I mean, many, many of our patients say, my God, I wish I'd learned this 30 or 40 years ago. And I smile at them and say, you know what? That's an interesting thought, but the fact of the matter is you're not dead yet. There are an infinite number of moments between now and the time you'll die, so maybe it's the perfect time for you to come to mindfulness. Never mind about the past. Just live from here on, you know, as if, you know, every moment might count. And that doesn't mean that, you know, you'll be mindful every moment. No one can be mindful in every moment. So the mind comes, the mind goes, it waves, just as we said. But the more you can give that yourself over to that with awareness, the deeper the practice becomes. And as I said, ultimately, the real practice of meditation isn't how long you sit or whether you do a body scan every day for 45 minutes. All of these things are methods that we train people in. But the real meditation practice is how you live your life from moment to moment in every interaction that you have with nature, with other human beings, with the people you love the most, with the people you fear the most, and ultimately with yourself.
Jon Kabat-Zinn has described his journey through mindfulness in several best-selling books, including Wherever You Go, There You Are, and Full Catastrophe Living.
What are the qualities of a person who is leading his or her life in a mindful way?
Well, you know, I don't like to extend too many carrots around qualities, you know, that well, if you practice mindfulness, then you'll have these 10 things happen to you that will feel fantastic, because I far prefer for people to discover it for themselves. But between you and me and the infinite audience that's listening at the moment, some of the qualities are that you become kinder with yourself and other people. Why? Because you take things less personally, so you don't have to be caught by every negativity that comes your way. And you can therefore be more compassionate for other people who are suffering. So you might become more kind to yourself as well as others, more compassionate to yourself as well as others, more empathic to yourself as well as others. And then, of course, you live, and I probably should have said this first, a more embodied life. In other words, you're more in your body. There's this wonderful line that I like to quote a lot from James Joyce in one of the short stories in his volume Dubliners that goes like this: Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body. Now, most of us live a short distance from our body because we're living in our heads all the time, as we were talking about.
Most of us are having an out-of-body experience.
All the time. So that's another kind of quality that develops, is a quality of embodied presence. And you really feel it. With the Dalai Lama, for instance, in Tibetan, they call him Kundun. And I write about this in Coming to Our Senses. There's a whole chapter on presence. The word Kundun in Tibetan means presence. So they refer to the Dalai Lama not so much as Your Holiness, but as the presence. Why? Because he's really present. He's really present.
What does that mean to be really present?
Well, you feel it when you're in his presence. Because when he, for instance, looks at you, even if he doesn't know you from Adam, let's say he often wants to meet with like the hotel staff when he's staying at a hotel. And by staff, it doesn't mean like the CEO of the, hotel chain. He means the janitors, the waiters, the people who make the beds, and so forth. And when he connects with you, when he looks at you, you get the impression that in that moment, he doesn't have anything else on his mind. He's just seeing you, and you feel it. That's what I mean by presence. And there's a certain kind of acceptance associated with it. It's like you're okay already as you are. You don't need to be the CEO if you're the janitor. It's fine to be the janitor.
And so is that, in mindfulness, how we view others, how we view life? It's okay exactly as it is?
Yes. This can be very easily misunderstood. It is as it is. It's not that it's okay as it is. It merely is as it is.
Because, of course, there are some problems in life that need correction.
That is absolutely right. But if you bring too aggressive an approach to it, then you can actually have your desire to change things, say, in the domain of social justice or anything else, backfire on you. So the greatest form of political action or social action or progressive societal change or whatever is to actually start with the deep recognition and acceptance of things as they are. That does not mean passive resignation or that we should leave them be as they are, but can we actually make a contribution coming from a place of spaciousness of heart and clarity of mind that really does shift the society towards greater compassion, towards greater well-being, towards less harming?
Jon Kabat-Zinn, founder of the University of Massachusetts Stress Reduction Clinic and author of Coming to Our Senses. Listening to Humankind, I'm David Freudberg. Studio recording by Steve Colby. Editorial assistance from Thomas Royal. Webmaster Brian K. Johnson. Special thanks to Tony Buck. Our program is presented by Human Media in association with The Network Incorporated. Program development and support provided by Chart Media.
To purchase a CD copy of this program, please call 1-800-5-LISTEN. That's 1-800-5-LISTEN. Or visit our website, where you can also obtain an audio download of this and our other programs and can hear selected episodes free. You can access free written materials related to this program as well. Our web address is humanmedia.org. That's humanmedia.org. Again, if you'd like to purchase a CD copy of Humankind by phone, please call 1-800-5-LISTEN, and our web address is humanmedia.org.
This segment, part one of The Present Moment with Jon Kabat-Zinn, is Humankind Program 123.
The executive producer is David Freudberg. This is Humankind.
To hear more episodes of Humankind, you can subscribe to our free podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast player. A new episode each week. The podcast title is Humankind on Public Radio. And if you enjoy this program, be sure to leave us a kind review at iTunes and Stitcher. If you want to support the program, please visit humanmedia.org. And at the top of the homepage, click on How You Can Help. Again, our web address is humanmedia.org. Thanks.